Happy Sabbath. You know what's really happy? That next week I'm not going to be up here. That's the best part. Okay. So, the call to worship was from Mark, the parable sower of the seeds. Have you any idea how that would relate to the song we just sang? Neither do I, so we'll think about it and see if we can come up with something. When I think of the parable of the sower of the seeds, often I kind of think that it deals with people when they first start to hear the message. That there are those, you're having an evangelistic campaign, you're going to send out your flyers, and there's a group of people who as soon as they hear it, they're like, no, forget it. And then there's people who say, yeah, that looks interesting, and they come to every meeting, yeah, this is great, I like this. But then as soon as the meetings are over, things come up, and they disappear. None of those that stick all the way through, and I want to be a Christian, I want to follow this, but they don't last too long. Soon those thorns come up and they disappear. And I think it applies in that situation, but the parable also definitely applies to us as seasoned Christians, if you like. That the same type of situations can arise in our life. And I would like to see if we might be able to find some analogies of where that can be applicable to us today. And I think especially that we can look at some military history. As some of you know, that one of my day jobs is as a history professor with kind of a specialty in military history. In preparing for some of my classes recently, I read about World War II. And I read some stories of Japanese soldiers who at the end of the war, they refused to surrender. And I'd like to see if there's an analogy between them and us today as Christians. Now, with this analogy, we need to keep in mind that no modern-day analogy is perfect, and especially this one, as the Japanese ended up on the losing side, whereas we as Christians are going to be on the winning side. While they resisted, it was really kind of unnecessary and fruitless, but our efforts and resistance is not. So this analogy only goes so far. But I think the first step in this analogy, I'm kind of going with the title of the sermon, Behind Enemy Lines. Near the end of the war, the Japanese felt themselves to be behind enemy lines when the Americans were capturing the island or wherever they happened to be stationed. Are we in a similar situation today as Christians? I would suggest maybe we are. That, especially if you look at the book of Job, that it mentions how Satan was meeting with God in heaven. And there's implication that when humanity sinned, Satan claimed princeship over this earth, that he was in charge now, no longer belonged to God. And that is why he was meeting in heaven. In fact, Ellen White supports that idea. And if you also look to John 14, verse 30, Jesus said, "Hereafter I will not talk much with you, for the prince of this world cometh, and hath nothing in me." The SDA concordance suggests that the prince of this world, or this earth, is actually referring to Satan. So I'd say there might be a pretty clear indication, especially if you look around the world today. Do you think we're in a world that's run entirely by God? Does there seem to be some evil influences going on in this world? I think perhaps it would be hard to say that this is a perfect world run by the Lord, but there are definite evil overtones around us every day. And the effort is going to have to be, can we follow what those Japanese soldiers did? They had orders, they had cause that they were supposed to follow, and their resistance. And do we have similar types of orders, similar things that we should be doing in this evil world? I think if you look at 2 Timothy 4, we might be able to find some. Second Timothy 4, verse 2. And Paul gives us some instructions. "Preach the word. Be prepared in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction." And if you skip down to verse 5, he continues, "But you keep your head in all situations, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, discharge all the duties of your ministry." So perhaps that is one of the orders we should be following today and in our life, that we should be continuing to follow the good word and preach and evangelize to this evil world around us. And I've selected three stories that hopefully will give us an example of this. Now, each one, hopefully, will mirror one of those parables of the sower and the seeds. The first example are two soldiers who are on Iwo Jima. The Americans have come, they're starting to capture the island, and these two individuals decided they do not want to give up. They're going to follow the orders of their emperor, their ruler. They're going to do their duty. They're going to resist. They won't give in to that temptation. So they decide to separate themselves from everyone else around them, from the Americans. They go into a cave. They start to hide in this cave, keep themselves safe and separate. They don't want to be found, so they take some barbed wire, put it across the entrance of this cave, make sure that no one will accidentally stumble on them, and then capture them or at least cause them to be tempted into surrendering. Time goes by. They're surviving in their cave. They're living off of the enemy. Everything they need to survive, they steal from the Americans. In fact, they live like this for about 3 years. After a while, they start to get tired. So why are we doing this? Don't we deserve a better life? I mean, we've resisted longer than our other comrades. Everybody else is gone. Haven't we done our duty yet? I mean, why do I just have to live off the scraps from the Americans? I haven't heard anything from Japan in 3 years. Am I really supposed to be doing this? How come I can only get like the cast-off uniforms or the partially used batteries for my flashlight that I had to steal to even have a flashlight? Don't I deserve something better? I've done my part. Is it really that important anymore? Maybe it's not a big deal. So eventually they decide, well, let's just give up. It's not worth it. So they walk out onto the road and wait to be captured. Pretty soon, an American drives by in his Jeep, pulls over, says, "Hey, get in." So they get in, waiting for the inevitable, drives up to the top of the hill where the rest of the compound was, and he gets out and goes about his job, kind of sitting there. So they start walking around camp. They were wearing American uniforms. They had stolen what they needed to survive. That American soldier didn't know they were Japanese. They looked like everybody else. They were just Americans. It wasn't until later in the day that someone else realized that these are two Japanese guys wandering around looking up the flagpole, just kind of standing in the middle of camp. And then they were arrested. Does that ever happen, something like that, with us today? I think perhaps some of us or some of our churches start to have this fervor, we're going to resist Satan. We're going to avoid him. We're going to avoid these temptations. So we set ourselves apart. We kind of create a safe zone, if you like. But we start to get distracted by the comforts of this world. You know, it starts to become more important to us than our original mission. Some of those barriers we set up, they're not that important. Maybe we really haven't stayed in touch with our commander very well. We haven't heard his word lately. So we start to think, maybe if I work that extra half an hour Friday night after sundown, that's not really a big deal, is it? You know, maybe if I go watch those R-rated movies, that's not really a big deal. If I cut my worship down to like 5 minutes a night, so right before the prime time comes on, so I can watch that good show that's a really good one this season, oh, Lost, I love it. Man, it's not going to be that big a deal, is it? Maybe if I decide to go to the football game, you know, it starts at 5 on Saturday afternoon, sun's not down till 6:30, but you know, Colts doing really good this season, it's going to be okay. I spent the rest of the day with God, right? It's not that big of a deal. Maybe at potluck, sitting around, and did you hear what they're doing to the super ferry? I mean, what do you think legally? Who's really in the right here? I mean, what is that really? It's not that big of a deal, is it? All of these little things, maybe they can start to distract us. Maybe they're switching our focus a little bit from what we're really supposed to be doing here, those final marching orders. And pretty soon, we're not effective Christians. And soon we disappear. We're not Christians at all. And I think Paul reminds us of what happens when we start to live our life like that. In James 4, verse 4, he says, "You adulterous people, Don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred toward God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Pretty concerning. How do you live in this world and not be a friend? How can we really separate ourselves? Well, this seems to be kind of a bad example of what we need to do to survive. Pretty soon, if we try to be too friendly, that friendship will, just like those thorns, blow away the seeds, and we are no longer effective Christians. So what about the other seeds in that parable? Well, we have another situation. And this situation took place on Guam. And the soldier's name was Yokoi. Now, he had the same ideas as the first group of soldiers on Iwo Jima. He wanted to resist. He wasn't going to surrender when the Americans came. And he had more drive, if you like. He wasn't just going to find a cave and hide somewhere. Instead, he dug himself a home. It was a little home. It was only a hole 8 feet by 10 feet, but that was his home. He put effort into that. And he didn't have to survive off stealing from the Americans. He would live off of the land. He figured out how to sew his own clothes. He actually made buttons out of plants. He had shirts, pants, shoes, everything he'd need. He could live off the land. He had coconuts. He had other plants that were growing he could use for food. He made his own homemade net so he could catch fish and go look for shrimp. And he had a great life. In fact, if he ever got lonely, he had two friends that were doing the exact same thing, not too far away. So when that depression, that desire to surrender came along, he could go visit them. And he survived for a long time like this. Even when those two friends died from starvation, he didn't get discouraged. He decided he was going to continue following his mission. In fact, he even kept his rifle. All those years, he had his rifle with him, that symbol of being a soldier. He was a Japanese soldier. Well, he survived like that for 27 years. It wasn't until 1972 that he finally decided that he'd had enough, that he was going to go out and surrender. Japanese weren't coming back. So he walks out, and when he surrendered, he told the Americans, "I'm sorry I did not serve His Majesty to my satisfaction. We Japanese soldiers were told to prefer death to the disgrace of getting captured alive." It's a pretty good example, isn't it? 27 years living in a hole in the ground, making clothes, just because you were told you had to surrender, following those orders. But somewhere along the way, a problem arose. He realized the war was over. He wasn't lasting 27 years just because he was waiting for the Japanese to come back. He knew the war was over. He had become a hermit. He was afraid of going out and possibly having some disgrace of surrendering. Even though he knew the war was over, he didn't want to face that. And are we ever like that? We start out strong. We want to resist the devil. We create social networks to keep us safe, to rely on. We decide that we're going to do our own efforts to preserve us. But after a while, we start to forget the meaning of some of these things. I mean, we keep our Bibles, center of our life, just like he kept his rifle. But when he surrendered, that rifle was rusty. It didn't work. It was just a thing. We ever have those Bibles sitting in our house on the shelf that start to get dusty? It's just a book. It doesn't really matter anymore. Sometimes we lose the value behind the symbol. Sometimes we rely on our own efforts. Or maybe we think that I do good things. I go out and feed the homeless every Sabbath. I serve in the church office. I make a really good potluck dish every Sabbath. I'm here at church. I might be sleeping, but I'm here. Isn't that important? Soon we start to rely on our own efforts and the meaning behind these things. Our own traditions become important. And when we lose the meaning behind those traditions, they're pointless. We've created an artificial reality. In fact, Paul warns us of this in Colossians 2, verse 8. He says, "See to it that no one takes you captive through the hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ." And those who do start to follow these basic traditions instead of Christ, they end up like the Pharisees, who Jesus mentions in Matthew 23. Matthew 23, verses 27 and 28. 23, that looks better. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of dead men's bones and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. And one of my first thoughts when I read that, I'm like, it's the Pharisees for you, hypocrites. I'm not like that. I'm not going to be like that. I mean, the Pharisees are the bad guys, right? I mean, they killed Christ. I'd never do something like that. Well, maybe, maybe not. In the end days, is things like this still going to happen? Are we still hypocrites? Do we still just have the veneer, the outside? And it reminded me of Jude 18 and 19. It says, in the last times there will be scoffers who will follow their own ungodly desires. These are the men who divide you, who follow mere natural instincts and do not have the Spirit. So even in the last days, the same thing is going to be happening. People who follow their own traditions, their own ideas, they're not relying on the Spirit. So people who have fought the good fight, you know, they've decided to persevere, they're sticking through, they've been Christians for a long time, and even in those last days, they're going to be sucked aside by these traditions of religion, by the things of this world, their own thoughts, instead of having that core relationship with the Lord that will see them through. So, those seem to be fairly bad examples of things that may happen to us, how those seeds, when they're spread, we can see how perhaps they're not going to really grow fruit or have wheat, if you like. So those are pretty good examples of problems. Do we have an example of those last seeds, the ones that actually do well? And that can be found in Lieutenant Onoda. Now, he was a little different than the other two examples we have. He was an officer who was trained as an intelligence officer. He went to school specializing in guerrilla warfare. So he was trained to live a life in hiding against the Americans. And he was stationed on Mindanao. And he was called together with other officers there in the Philippines. And he was told, the Americans are coming. We're going to send you to this little island off of Mindanao, and you are going to resist. In fact, his divisional commander gave him these orders. You are absolutely forbidden to die by your own hand. It may take 3 years, it may take five, but whatever happens will come back for you. Until then, so long as you have one soldier, you are to continue to lead them. You may have to live on coconuts. If that's the case, live on coconuts. Under no circumstances are you to give up your life voluntarily. Now, our lieutenant took this to heart. He took his men, they went to this little island, they split up into little groups of three or four people, they went into hiding, and they resisted the Americans. Now, the first he heard that the war was over was in October 1945. They saw this little leaflet. One of their group had shot a cow, and when they went back, they found this little leaflet next to it. And they looked at it, and it says, the war was over in August. Surrender. This can't be true. Just a couple days ago, somebody shot at us. How can the war be over if they're still shooting at us? This is a propaganda trick. So they kept resisting. And the Americans and others would try to let them know the war is over. They dropped leaflets. They would have copies of the orders of General Yamashita, the commander of all of the Philippines. He told all of his soldiers to come out of the hills and surrender. The war's over. Well, Lieutenant Onoda would look at these orders and he says, this looks a little fishy. This line here, it says, hygienic sucker. That doesn't sound right. So we're going to be hauled to Japan. This is a trick. This can't be right. So every time they had some evidence that the war was over, they would find a reason to disbelieve it. They had letters from their friends, their family, saying the war was over. Even his brother came all the way over and on a loudspeaker said, the war is over, brother. Come out of the hills. Now, Onoda couldn't really understand how the Americans captured his brother, but it has to be a trick. He would even sneak into villages and turn on the radio and listen to the radio, but it was a trick. They convinced themselves that they were going to follow the orders, the last orders of their commander. They would hide out. Now, year after year, they continued to do this. In 1958, after 8 years of hiding, they stumbled into an ambush. And one of the men, a Corporal Shimada, was killed. Now, the year prior to that, he had been injured. And he healed physically, but he wasn't really quite the same. He was a little more gloomy, a little more depressed. And because he was a little more depressed, not really paying attention, he wasn't able to react. And that is one reason why he was killed. A little bit before this, the youngest member of the group, he had been hiding with everyone else. He got tired of hiding. He thought these guys are... So he decided to go off on his own and try to do it himself. After 6 months of hiding out in the jungle by himself, he just couldn't resist anymore and he surrendered to the Americans. So now it was only down to Onoda and one other soldier. They continued. They continued hiding and resisting until 1972. And then the other soldier was killed. Even then, even when Onoda was all by himself, he still didn't surrender. He continued for 2 more years. It wasn't until 1974 that he finally surrendered. And when he surrendered, he only surrendered because someone found that divisional commander who had given him his last order to resist, brought him to that little island, stood him in a field where Onoda would see him, and had him give a direct command to the soldier, "You're now ordered to surrender. The war's over." Once he could see and hear that final orders of his commander, he was willing to surrender. And when he surrendered, he brought a couple of rifles, 500 rounds of ammunition, hand grenades with him. So unlike our earlier soldier, he was ready to fight. He had constantly been ready and had those weapons with him. So is there a spiritual application to that? Can we be like that soldier? Well, first let's look at his two companions. The first guy who decided to try to go off on his own. Do we ever try to do things on our own like that? I think there's a reason why we have Christian fellowship. When we try to go off on our own, we're not going to be able to resist Satan's temptations as well. Hebrews 10, verse 24 and 25 says, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. But let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." When you think about it, Satan has had thousands of years to perfect his temptations, hasn't he? At best, we'll have like 120 years. Are we really going to be able to resist his temptations? Are we really supposed to try to resist his temptations? We need to rely on Christ to do that for us. But sometimes it's easy to forget the role he has, which is why we are reminded that two are better than one, that if one falls, the other can lift him up. I think that is what the role of Christian fellowship is for, to remind us and encourage us and to point us to Christ. Well, what about the other soldier? Sometimes when we get injured, physically or spiritually, emotionally, we focus inward or we focus on that problem, that hurt, that issue. And by looking on that, we stop looking towards Christ. And whenever we do that, we only make ourselves more vulnerable to further temptations. And soon we fall by the wayside as well. Now, even when we're all by ourselves, in the end it was just Onoda, we're all alone. I think we should remember that really we never are all alone. Christ is always there. And when we try to think that we are alone, remember that He will never leave us nor forsake us, that we need to turn on Him. That kind of made me think about 1 Peter 4:13, that we're striving to fight, we're striving to persevere, we're striving to carry out these orders. And in 1 Peter, it says, what is the end result of some of these desires to continue fighting? It says, "We should rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may be overjoyed when His glory is revealed." I don't know. Are you ready to rejoice in Christ's sufferings? Right now, if I'm thinking, if I had to go through just a portion of what He had to go through, I'm not going to be rejoicing. Tortured, killed, that doesn't sound fun. How come I'm not ready to rejoice? I think it's because I'm really not practicing what I'm preaching right now. Am I really keeping my life focused on this book? Am I daily, hourly looking towards Christ? Listening only for His commands? And I don't think I am right now. If I was, perhaps what Peter says is our goal would seem attainable to me. And it might seem a little trite, but I think there is a reason why Ephesians 6 has a whole paragraph about the armor of God. Now, we won't read the whole paragraph, but Ephesians 6, verses 10 to 18, I think will help us get to the point where we can rejoice in Christ's sufferings, rejoice in the fact that we are persevering in this battle. I think we need to be able to realize that each one of these items of armor, there's a specific reason for it. And if we don't have all of these, we're going to fail. We're not fighting flesh and blood. It says we're fighting Satan and evil forces in this planet. And if we don't try to stand firm, if we don't rejoice in those trials, we need God's truth to even consider being able to do that. We need it surrounding us. We need His righteousness at the center of our being. We need His peace to be able to guide every step of the way. Without His faith and without that desire in His salvation, there's no way we could even try to resist Satan's temptations. And I think it's especially important to the conclusion of all of this armor that we have to be on to protect us, to persevere. It comes to verse 18. Pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayer and requests. With this in mind, be alert and always keep on praying for all the saints. It's that fellowship again. The prayer connecting us to God and all of us to each other. That without that support, it's going to be difficult to be able to carry through all of these other things that we need to do. Now, when Onoda surrendered, he had been hiding for 30 years. When he discovers the war is over, he wondered, what was the point? Was this just a waste of my life? We don't really have the answer to that, but we have the answer to our question. What is the point of our fight? Why are we resisting? Is He really going to come back for us? And we know the answer. It might be 3 years, it might be 5 years, 500 years, but Christ will return. We're going to hear His voice telling us the war is over. And I just hope that we'll be able to join Paul, as he says in 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 to 8. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all who have longed for His appearing. I would just pray that day will be soon, and that we will all be there.